College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Issues 2025. I'm Steve McIntosh, and our guest is Superintendent of Wichita Schools, Kelly Bielefeld. Welcome to Issues 2025.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be here.
So I'm one for one.
Yeah, very good. Yeah.
We Bielefeld.
That might be the hardest part. Yeah.
For me, yeah. Well, you started as a superintendent, I believe, in July of 2023.
Yep.
Give us a little background on your professional life before that.
Oh, sure. So I've been with Wichita Public Schools since 2020. Before becoming superintendent, I was director of college and career readiness and CTE programs. So all things high school, work readiness, and college readiness. Before that, I was assistant superintendent in Clearwater and then a principal for 13 years in various places before that. So Clearwater, Derby, and Renwick.
And you worked as a principal?
Yeah. Yeah.
How about a classroom teacher?
Yeah. So I started my career in Goddard. That was a long time ago, about 25 years ago. I say back when there was only one high school in Goddard. I taught at the one high school, the original, you know.
Like the two biggest, fastest growing communities in Kansas are Mays and Goddard, I think.
Yeah, Goddard. Wow. Yeah, Goddard is definitely still growing.
It's changed a lot.
Yep.
As the top person in the largest school district in Kansas, do you experience a lot of stress with the work?
Yeah, that's a good question. It comes and goes. We've had a number of substantial decisions in this first 18 months or so that I've been here, as far as budget challenges, school closures. We had a Department of Justice settlement that we agreed to last July of 24. And now a big bond issue. So lots of things, but the advantage of a district our size is having an incredible team, a large team of people that's very, very professional, very well versed, and they make the thing go. And I'm honored to get to lead them every day. So it has its moments, but I sleep pretty well most nights. So
did you start the job after the pandemic?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, at least you missed. Well, yes. You didn't miss it because you were working here. But
yeah. Yeah.
So what is it that you do to relax? I don't want to be personal, but what do you do to relax then?
Well, a lot of family time. My family definitely keeps me humble, and we have eight kids. Six of them are in Wichita Public Schools and two college kids. And so, I wouldn't always describe it as relaxing, but it's definitely grounding, right? It's why I do what I do. And, I'm not only the leader of the system, I'm a user of the system. I have kids in three different schools. So I get that perspective too, which I think helps me do my job better in a lot of ways. So
enrollment in USD 259, as I understand, about 47,000 now, I believe.
Yep.
For the past few years, that number has been going down. Why is that? What's behind that?
Yeah, great question. Really, since about 16-17, we've seen a fairly steady decline. And then there was a significant drop during the pandemic in 2000. We went fully remote for all of our secondary schools, and I think a lot of families wanted a different option, wanted to either be face-to-face or chose a different educational avenue. So we lost about 2,600 kids that year across the system. But overall, we peaked in the early 2010s around 51,000, and it's steadily been declining since then. I think there's a couple factors. Birth rate in Sedgwick County, if you track that at all, there's just fewer babies being born, fewer kids living under a roof. We have an aging population and within the city limits overall. And a lot of people are choosing, other educational options, whether that's homeschool or private school or whatever. That's a factor too. So, this past year it really was pretty level. We actually have more high school kids. If you just pull out high school, we have more high school kids this year than at any point since 2000. So we have about over 13,000 high school students. So high schools are full and busting at the seams, and it's in the younger areas that we don't see quite as many kids. So
you've got a little competition from some of these from Andover and Goddard and Mays. And Derby, I mean, they're all growing.
Yeah,
people are moving to the suburbs, I guess, huh?
Yeah, there's some of that, and some of those suburbs are growing more than others. You know, we mentioned Goddard. I do think they're projected to have a lot of growth, but overall, you know, in our community, Sedgwick, Butler County, you know, we've seen population, you know, steady small population increase overall, not just kids. But that doesn't always equate to, you know, everyone busting at the seams as far as students go. I do think the trends, you know, that we need to continue to contract across our district. You know, that's part of what we did with school closures last year, and part of what the bond issue is intended to do is right size a little bit so that we have the right number of seats available for the kids that we need to serve.
Let's talk about that bond issue for a moment. The referendum is February 25th, later this month. It's for a proposed $450 million. First thing that many will ask, what does that mean to my property taxes?
Yeah, that's probably the question we all want to know. And over the course of the past few years, as valuations have gone up, you know, even though our tax rate has gone down steadily as a district, each of us, probably you and I, have paid more in property taxes because the value of our house has gone up. So we're at a 14-year low as far as the tax rate goes, but that doesn't always what people feel when they get their statement every year. So what's the implication for this? We're at a 14-year low. Our bond and interest mill rate right now is 7.5 mils, and mills and valuations and all that can be pretty complicated. But what that translates to currently that we're paying, if you have a $200,000 house, that's about $14 or so a month that you're paying currently for the bond rate for the district. We would just like to extend that. So that won't go up. We're already paying it. It would just be extended out another 20 years. If it were to go away, if it were to get voted down and that 7.5 mils were to go away, I don't think anyone would feel like they had a windfall of money all of a sudden. You know, it's about $170 for a whole year for a $200,000 house. So not that that's nothing, but I don't think for most people it's a huge impact to their pocketbook if it were to go away. So That's the numbers. That's the impact.
Voters narrowly approved a bond issue in 2008, which paid for many much needed improvements that they could see. I mean, we could see, you know, north and west and all these modernizing, and even had air conditioning. Why is this bond issue needed then?
Yeah.
Bottom line, why do we need this?
Similar. I mean, I already mentioned a little bit the right sizing. That's a bit of what we're trying to do is just become more efficient as a system. You know, we closed six schools last year, four elementaries, two middle schools. We plan to close four more elementaries. And really these are smaller elementaries, you know, with 250, 300 students in them. We can build a new school, consolidate two smaller schools into one bigger school, not increase class size, but have more students in that school and operate it more efficiently all the way around. So as a taxpayer, I think, you know, that even if you don't have kids in the system, that's of interest, you know, that we're being better stewards of the tax dollars through this plan. You know, this plan has five new elementary schools, two new middle schools, a future ready center for construction trades, and a new early childhood center. So those are kind of the things that it's paying for. But really, it's about, reinvesting in our community. It's about what we feel are real needs that our schools have. Our average age of our schools is over 60 years. So once a building gets to a certain age, it can feel less productive to continue to put money into it. It can be more expensive with those repairs, et cetera. So,
but you're talking about closing schools. The one in my neighborhood, Woodland, where my kids went to kindergarten, and I think my wife went to kindergarten there. But those parents are going to have to put those kids someplace else. And it kind of disrupts, you know, the families and how they do things.
Yes.
Like, it's called change.
Yes.
And it's tough.
It is.
So where will they go then? They have to go a couple of miles over somewhere else then, huh?
Yeah, in that area of town specifically. So if you look at the map.
Riverside area.
Riverside, kind of over to West Street and then north a little bit. So, you know, we're rebuilding. You know, I hear from some of those families in that neighborhood, well, all the schools that are being closed are in the same neighborhood, which is true. But it's also true that three of the five new schools are being built in that neighborhood. So we're wanting to reinvest in that neighborhood. But, you know, you think of Black Elementary and OK Elementary, they're less than a mile apart and they each have, you know, 250 students in them. Right. It just becomes an economy of scale. At some point, it's not efficient to operate that many small schools. So we will still have neighborhood schools. So to answer your question, your family's in that Woodlawn, North Riverside area. We'll still have a neighborhood school. It'll just be a bigger neighborhood, which parents don't love that answer, right? It is change. It's either a longer walk or a longer drive or more congestion, whatever it is. But with a rebuilt McLean and a rebuilt Irving on either side of that neighborhood and brand new buildings there, I think it'll be ultimately our hope is that people feel better about, you know, a new updated facility that their kids can go to that's designed for learners of today, that has the safety accommodations that are needed. You know, Woodland has that exterior fire escape from the third floor.
You know
that when you think about things like that and think about safety and how we'd build a school today, you know, those are challenges. Think of a day a day that it's sleeting or snowing out. If we were to have some sort of fire, that would be very complicated. So we like our small, you know, neighborhood schools and the historic buildings and those sorts of things. But, you know, we feel like it's time to make some of those hard decisions.
So what will be the new schools then?
So McLean Elementary, Irving Elementary, and Black Elementary.
When you talk about McLean, that's the other school my kids went to.
Yeah.
Are you going to tear it down and start over or renovate?
Each one of these will be a little bit different. We're actually in communication with the city right now with Columbine Park and possibly building the new McLean where the park is and then tearing down the old McLean and giving that back to them as parkland and just swapping the land. Uh-huh. Irving will be rebuilt on that site. I don't know if the whole thing will be demolished, but parts of it would. And then Black would be a total rebuild. And then the other two are Adams and Caldwell, which are on the east side of town. But Adams and Caldwell are two areas that we see, the demographic map show the most area of growth as far as students go. So, which might surprise people that 13th and Oliver and Harry and Edgemore would be areas of growth. Yeah. But a lot of affordable housing in those areas for families that they can move into. So
USD 259 has several informational meetings later this month. The schedule can be found on your webpage. We won't mention it now, but have you received much input personally from parents?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
They get to you sometimes.
Of course. You know, and I try to be accessible, but yeah, either through email or, you know, I attend a lot of these community meetings too. This master plan the one that we're describing as far as which schools get rebuilt, which schools get consolidated, you know, that was approved by the board in July or June of 24. So the plan's been out for a while. So we've engaged a lot already with parents, but now that it's kind of coming down to it, and, you know, and there's getting a lot more publicity and communication out there, sure, people are more engaged. So
I confess this, the whole referendum kind of snuck up on me about 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Wow, forgot about that.
Well, with the November election, right, that took a lot of air out of the room,
yeah,
and then the holidays, we knew that we were going to have to hit it hard after Christmas and just making sure everyone knew about it. So
you're listening to Issues 2025 on the Odyssey radio stations, and our guest is Superintendent of Wichita Schools, Kelly Bielefeld. Critics opposing millions on schools while student scores are declining. That's what they're saying. How do you answer that?
Yeah. It's a good question. And I do think, as with anything, you can kind of pull data and numbers to make them jive with whatever your narrative is. I would contend that in so many ways our schools are not failing. You know, one test score of a state assessment is one indicator, but I could give you 12 other indicators that show our kids are being really successful in all sorts of ways. You know, we use ACT scores at the high school, and our ACT scores are up quite a bit. Graduation rate has never been higher. We're at 84% graduation rate, graduated over 3,000 students this past year. We do a lot with credentials and work-based skills and things like that at the high school level. And I believe a student that is motivated to pass a credential test for like an EMT or a CNA or something like that is better proof that they're equipped for their future than a state assessment. But that being what it is, you know, what I mentioned before is even if, and I don't believe this, but even if you said, well, you know, new schools don't equal better test scores, even if you believe that to be true, I do think there is a lot of logic as a taxpayer to should we continue to put money, our tax dollars, into these 70-year-old buildings that have 70-year-old boilers and older systems that aren't equipped with the safety features they need, they're not ADA accessible, or is it a better use of our tax dollars to have fewer of those buildings with newer systems that create a better investment? So I do think that that's a piece of the discussion that's pretty relevant. We're trying to be efficient. We're trying to be good stewards of the tax dollars. And I do think since COVID, pretty much all of our metrics are going up as far as test scores go. If you go and poach some numbers from kind of before and after and do some of that, there was a significant drop all across the nation in every kind of school, private, public, whatever. COVID took a big hit on student performance. We've recovered since then. We're not to where we need to be. We have a lot of work to do. We have a strategic plan that's put a lot of good things in place with third grade reading and early literacy. But we are, yeah, I do think that if that's the logic, it isn't worth the investment. I do think there's a lot of ways we can show that it really is worth the investment.
You know, test scores are, I'm sure they're valuable in many ways, but would you think that sometimes they are overemphasized as a measure of how kids getting educated?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I do think, right? I mean, you think of a lot of people.
I've got grandchildren who have memorized a lot of stuff, but sometimes, and they're not in the school, so their reasoning is not quite there.
Right.
And the only thing that I can bring up, I bring from USD 259 is they taught me to question, is it logical? I mean, the basics.
Yeah, that critical thinking.
Yeah, critical thinking.
Yeah, yes.
Test scores sometimes don't get to that.
Right, that is true. That is true. And I do think that's part of why we've done, especially at the high school level, what we've done with the career kind of awareness opportunities and the Future Ready Centers is getting a student in that work world where you learn some of those skills of what to do, what not to do, professionalism, communication. Those things are critically important. I mean, we hear from employers all the time, you know, that's what we need. We need people that show up, that, you know, can get off their cell phone, can communicate with the supervisor. We'll train them and teach them what we need to train them on. And you know, I have a couple daughters that are in college, another son that's headed to college. None of the colleges are asking about their state assessment score, right? They're asking about GPA, attendance, you know, community service, and their ACT score. They're not worried about that single test score. So for what that's worth.
Let's give us a picture of your student body. It was said by previous superintendents, the largest urban school district between the Mississippi and Denver and between, you know, like Dallas and the it's a big school district.
It is, yeah.
And who are those kids? What's their demographic makeup?
Yeah, yeah, great question. And that is still true. If you look at Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, Iowa, Missouri, Arkansas, those six states, Omaha is number one and we're number two. So you think of Oklahoma City, Tulsa, St. Louis, Kansas City, Des Moines, we're bigger than all of those school districts. So very big, and we talk in big numbers. A lot of people, our student body doesn't necessarily completely reflect the city's demographics. Okay. So sometimes people are surprised to know, you know, we're 70% minority. So we have about 30% of our students Caucasian, about 20% is African American, and about 40% is Hispanic, and then 10% is Asian or other, you know, mix of other races. We're also at 80% poverty. So 4 out of 5 of our students are growing up in poverty. So
let me just interject. You're lucky you have any test scores at all.
Well,
if I take that, you know, of course, that's being kind of prejudiced as well.
Well, no, but you know, those are challenges, right? When a student shows up in kindergarten and they don't know letters and they haven't seen a book before and some of those things, or they're new to speaking English or, you know, any of those sorts of things, they're just challenges. And I believe our system does a great job of preparing kids for the future. If you've heard our mayor talk, you know, our mayor was an immigrant, an ESOL student who didn't speak English when she came here. And now look at how successful she is. Our current chamber president, same way. He didn't go through Wichita Public Schools, but an immigrant didn't. You know, most of our kids that come to the country probably don't have great test scores their first year or two or three. But that's really not our measure of success. It's the overall success in getting there.
I don't know if you still have this number, but I've heard, quote, the number of languages that are spoken in your school district, in the homes of the kids?
Yeah, 115. So 115.
I didn't know there were 115 languages.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that amazing?
Wow, that is crazy.
Yeah, we placed enrolled close to 1,000 refugee students last year. And again, if you're only in certain pockets of Wichita, you may not even realize that we are that diverse as a community. But so I mean, that's part of what makes the fabric of our school so amazing and cool. But those are also challenges, right? So those students take a different level and a different style of education to get there.
And that whole mix that you talked about is vastly different from when I was in school here.
Yeah.
And I'm one of those older voters, and one of those people say, well, it shouldn't change, has it? Well, yes, it has changed dramatically. Let's talk about I'm going to talk about my alma mater. We've had a fairly active alumni association. We've helped out with money and resources and so forth. Do all the schools get support from their former students?
Yeah.
I'm talking about the alumni.
Yeah, the high schools for sure. Yeah, I mean, I think the tie for alumni to their high schools is pretty strong. And, you know, all of our high schools have been around a long, long time. So,
You know, how important is positive parental involvement?
Well, it makes a huge difference, right? I mean, it makes all the difference in the life of a student. And part of our, you know, I believe, you know, the vast majority of our parents truly want their student to do well. They just have their own barriers in life that might get in the way of working a second shift job or having a language barrier or whatever it is. So we really try to work hard to engage those parents and fill a void, if need, not necessarily a void, but be that bridge. That's probably a better way to put it, between a parent who is well-meaning, wants their student to have all the success in the world, but may not have all the skills and all the resources to get them there. So, parent involvement and the alumni, the community support. You know, we did launch about 6 months ago a foundation, a Wichita Public Schools Foundation, which is an overarching brand that will be all across the district. That won't take the place of those alumni associations, but will support all of our students all across the district. So,
how does the business community support public schools?
Yeah, all sorts of ways, to be honest.
Really? Too many to mention, but
yeah. Well, and I mean, some of it's just, you know, flat out financial and you know, coat drives for schools and mitten drives and that sort of thing. But especially when I was working in my previous role with CTE, everything from donating equipment and supplies, you know, some of the construction trades folks will donate literally plywood and 2x4s to our construction classes, offering job shadowing, offering, you know, guest speakers to come in and tell kids about their career path, all the way up to internships, summer internships, full-on semester-long internships. I think a lot of our employers understand the better our students do, the better our whole community is. There's such a need for talent and pipeline and all of that sort of thing. And if we're not growing as a community, we need to cultivate those kids from our own system. And I feel like we're doing a very good job of that.
Enrichment of a person's life is a lot of what education is about, but it's also, bottom line, preparation for the rest of the life. You got to go out and earn a living.
That's right.
Most of us do anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That really is anything new and exciting? You just have a little bit of time left. You can mention one thing, maybe.
Sure. Well, you know, I mentioned the foundation. That was exciting. You know, The bond issue is the other thing that's exciting. The other thing that, you know, we're getting recognized by the Wichita Business Journal here in the next few weeks at the Innovation Awards for a program called Creative Minds. This was a pilot program we started this year. We're down at the Learning Lab, which is down at Union Station downtown. And I call it a vertical school. So it's like a K through 6 one-room schoolhouse, a modern-day one-room schoolhouse. So we have about 20 kids and about 12 families that are there. And they can – it's flexible schedule. It's interactive kids. So, you know, if a second grader wants to do a project with a fourth grader, they get together and learn together.
I got to cut you off. I'm sorry.
Oh, sure.
Our guest, Superintendent of Wichita Schools, Kelly Bielefeld. That's all for this edition of Issues 2025. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. I'm Steve McIntosh.